Hello and welcome to the Movie Breakdown. This is a big episode because we are returning to Jordan Peele in theaters after 2017's Oscar-nominated Get Out. This is his second film. It's called Us, and Chris is going to talk all about it. We also have two Netflix films that we're going to discuss, and as well, on top of that, the Disney-Fox merger is official, and we are going to be taking a look at what that means for the future of the properties of both companies, and talking about if Netflix is good for independent movies and filmmakers. I'm Scott Martin.
And I'm Christopher Spicer. And before we start, we're going to give you a little look into the window of what we do here on the podcast, because we record this show usually on Sunday morning. This is Sunday morning. And often every week before we start the show, I've got to try to rush the kids out the door so that they can go with my wife off to church. And today, my daughter declared that I did not get to pick out her dress today because I'm not good at picking clothes. And so she had to pick the dress today. And when she did pick the dress, she then spun around and said, "Everyone at church is going to say I'm so pretty." So, well, I have not created a modest daughter, I have to say. Though at the same time, in her defense, she's also the first person to tell other people that they're really pretty and beautiful.
Well, so, that's good. That's good.
So she expects to get it, but she also gives
she
it.
She gives it. She hands it out. Well, that's good. Go on.
I was going to say the dress she picked is also going to be a dress that she is going to wear for a wedding that we get to go off to in May.
Ooh.
So it's a fancy one. It looks like a cocktail dress.
Ooh. So like a cocktail waitress dress or a cocktail attendee?
Maybe it's not a cocktail dress. Maybe I don't know what a cocktail dress is. It's a black dress and it's like glittery. Maybe an evening dress? Is that what I should have said?
Well, I don't know. I haven't seen the dress. I would know. Obviously, I would know exactly what it is if I had seen it.
It's a dress that you wear at a fancy wedding.
Okay. So, a dress.
It's a dress, yeah.
Okay. we should also apologize to anyone who listens to the podcast first thing on Mondays. If you are one of those people, you may have heard us sound just a little different than normal, just a tad, a skosh, if you will.
It sounded like we were recording from an empty Air Canada arena.
Yes, it did.
Or the bottom of a well.
Yeah, or it sounded like we were recording in Nick Swardston's basement. Pick that one, too. That's a possibility.
That's the most terrifying.
It is.
Isn't that the same as above a well?
I think so. Anyways, there was an issue with the file. Somehow it added a sound effect on it. I have no idea. I looked at it. I tried to figure it out. Somehow just cutting and pasting worked, but oh my goodness, what a headache. So sorry to anyone who tried to listen first thing Monday morning.
And that is what happened. It was also a sound effect thing, but I will to this for the rest of my life wonder why anyone would want that sound effect.
True, unless people were either A, practicing their presidential inauguration in their head, practicing getting in a yelling match in a nuclear submarine, sort of like Crimson Tide, but just like a little more vast, right? I don't know. Those are the only two I can come up with.
Or practicing what it must be like for Carrot Top if he was going to play at the Rogers Center. Empty arena.
So there's three uses. We've come up immediately with three uses for that sound effect.
So clearly I was wrong.
Yes.
All right. What I was not wrong about, though, is when I was telling people that Jordan Peele is one of the filmmakers to look out for, and he's going to be one of the most exciting new directors. And he has delivered again, as Scott said. This time he's doing his follow-up movie to Get Out. This one is Us. Get Out was a huge shocker to people, as we have this comedian who then made this amazing, smart, deep horror movie that actually was scary and had layers and even got nominated for Best Picture. And I think a lot of people were wondering, what would he do in his sophomore effort? Could he follow it up? And he really does. He delivers once again with the awesome Us. And you see that the reason why he's a great filmmaker is he's clearly a student of cinema. He loves movies. You can tell he tells film history. Because when I think of all the great kind of filmmakers, you think of someone like a Tarantino or Steven Spielberg or Christopher Nolan. These are guys who absolutely love movies. And in all their movies, there's always like little Easter eggs or homages to past great films and past great directors. They have these little winks throughout. They take things that they loved as kids, but then they make it their own. They craft and they create these homages and these different kind of callbacks and make it something completely original. And this is what Jordan Peele's already doing with his second film. You look at this movie and there's definitely shades of sort of Brian De Palma's past work. Definitely there's some shots that clearly feel they came out of The Shining. You feel there was a callback to that. Stuff with Alfred Hitchcock, and definitely you throw in a little bit of Twilight Zone and The Outer Limits. And he blends all that to then make his own very confident film. We start here in 1986 with a young girl who's watching something on TV talking about, which was an actual charity at the time. I think it was called the Hands Across America. There was supposed to be a fundraiser that ended up being one that didn't necessarily work, but she's seen this. And then after that, she goes to a fair that's nearby at, I think it's, are they in Santa Fe or Santa Cruz? Sorry. And she eventually wanders off away from her parents and she goes into this fun house, this house in mirrors. And oh no, she encounters her exact replicant. It's not from a mirror. It's someone who looks just like her. And she gets traumatized because now we move to modern day. She's now become Lupita Nyong'o. So you know what? Life hasn't been totally horrible for her. And she's married to Winston Duke and she's got two young children. And they're going to the beach house for the holidays for a few weeks. And what I like here right away is you instantly get to know all the personalities of this family, the humor that Jordan Peele has there. You've got Winston Duke playing the father, and he's sort of, you know, he's a little bit dorky, a little bit goofy, trying to make his family have a good time, but also feeling like someone who's a caring father. The two child actors are great here. Daughter who's sort of obsessed with the phone because he's becoming a teenager. A son who's a little bit off, a little bit socially awkward. He likes to wear monster mask and try to do magic tricks. And Lupita Nyong'o plays Adelaide Wilson. And she's a caring, loving mom, but you could tell that she has been shaken by that past of when she saw that doppelganger, and she's feeling that this doppelganger could be hunting her, could be coming after her. Her husband obviously tries to humor her, but thinks she's being a little bit crazy. Like I said, the first little bit is just about you getting to know this family and creating their characters and making them someone you care about. And then there's a few creepy things. They go to the beach. There's a few little creepy things, little things that seem a little off. And then it all falls apart at nighttime as outside their house, they see these four figures staring at them and holding their hands. And it is just, it's really well built as being something that is really creepy. And they build it up. And they actually do have a sense of humor during this too. So you can see it is Jordan Peele. But you're kind of like, who are these things? What's going on? And eventually you find out, like I said, it's their doppelgangers. It's them. It's us. It's their exact double people. And so then you get into what feels like it's going to be a home invasion movie. And this is what I like about Jordan Peele, because it's a home invasion movie, but then it kind of shifts to being like more of a slasher film, and then it's a bit more of a chase film. Then it puts in some thriller action elements, and then it goes sort of far-fetched kind of Twilight Zone at the end. But he does it in such a confident manner that none of it feels jarring, and it just becomes a whole different amalgamation of different type of horror movies that you're used to. And I think he does a really good job of crafting that. The other thing I mentioned, there's a lot of Easter eggs, a lot of tributes to other movies, and he does a really good job throughout this movie where every scene, the props, objects, video cassettes, these different things, they all hint at something that could happen later in the movie. It alludes to everything. Every shot, every little piece in here hints to something that could happen after, or gives you an idea of what's going on here, or sets a mood. It's just so meticulous in how he constructed this. And there's incredible shots here, great use of shadows. Shadows is obviously a big theme here with the fact that, you know, you have your shadow, your exact double coming after you. And so I think that was really well done here. The music is its own character. This is an incredible score. Moments that would feel mundane, the type of music they use makes it feel chilling. It just amplifies every scene, every piece of action. It's just an incredible score that really just gives the movie a different kind of personality and adds so much tension and controls how you feel. These others I talk about, these us, the main one who is called Red, sort of the leader, the Lupita Nyong'o character, she sort of talks in a raspy type way, while the other ones of the us are sort of, they're more mute, and so they're not quite like the people that they look exactly like. They're a bit more monstrous. They're a bit more Neanderthal-like. And so as the movie unfolds, we find out what their purpose is and what they're going for. And what's amazing here is Lupita Nyong'o is just an amazing standout performance. As Adelaide, she's our hero. She's our matriarch. She's the person we're cheering for. She shows vulnerability, but she also shows compassion. And as Red, who she plays also, the main villain, she's absolutely terrifying. And she is, like I said, monstrous and sick. And this is just an amazing performance. This is going to be one of the best of the year. She's played two different characters. She looks like two different characters. She acts completely different. And it's just an amazing thing to see. Winston Duke's a bit of the comic relief, but he does a good job playing his two doubles as well. He provides a lot here. And it's just incredible. These performances are top-notch. Another thing I like here is the heroes are not just running and hiding all the time. They stand up for themselves. They fight. They go against these villains. And that's nice to see in horror movies because these are heroes we can root for, we care about them, and we want them to get through to the end. I said there's a bit of a Twilight Zone here. This movie takes some crazy twists, and I think some critics, that's the part that kind of threw them off. They said it gets a little far-fetched. I think Jordan Peele earns it. I think he hints at it. I think he does a good job of building towards what's going to be these crazy turns. I liked it. I like bizarre stuff, but I'll warn you, it does get bizarre at the end, but I think it is... I really do think it's well earned to get you there. And he, like I said, he drops little hints throughout the movie. This is going to be really rewatchable. Get Out was a movie that I liked more when I returned to it. And this is another one that I think is just going to be get better every single time. I think it's his second one is a masterpiece, just like the first. It's very different. If you like Get Out, this one provides different stuff. This one, it's about sort of what I think some of the symbolism here is this idea of how we can be our own worst enemies, how we are our past and our backgrounds and just our darker sides could be the things that unravel us. And as a creative person, I can connect to that sometimes my worst enemy is myself. And this movie's talking about how we can sometimes hate ourselves. Ourself can be the thing that undoes us. I think also, though, there's one part where the villains, the others, basically say, we are America. And I do think this is also talking about how, as a society, we could be our own worst enemy, where we can turn against ourselves, where we try to make people as others, as we try to hold other people down of different background. And so I think there's a lot to digest here, and it's a movie where I want to watch it again. I want to watch it several times this year, and I think I'm going to get more of it every time. Like I said, Get Out, every time I watched it, got better. I feel like this one's going to get better, but right off the bat, I'm going to give this one what I should have gave Get Out the first time, 4 stars. I think this is a classic piece of horror. Jordan Peele is now my favorite director going.
Oh, that is so good to hear. After Get Out, And sort of the experiences watching it, because you're right, it was a film, you know, it didn't sort of get more predictable as you watched it more times. It just felt smarter, and it felt like each time you could watch it from a slightly different angle. And it really was easy to, you know, sit down and watch it, you know, 2, 3, 4 times over the course of, you know, a few years. And it just intensified. And I'm so glad to hear that, you know, this film is, you know, up to sort of that level that we had started putting Jordan Peele on, because it gets so scary when you become attached to something. You don't want to get Jaws forward. You don't want to just get knocked off whatever pedestal of high hopes was established.
Chappied. You don't want to get Chappied.
Oh my goodness. Oh, Chappie.
Right?
Yeah.
There was a director that we championed a while ago.
Yes. Whose debut film was remarkably amazing and just fell apart after that. What's so interesting is, you know, when we saw Keanu a few years back in theater and watching Jordan Peele, it is easy to understand why, you know, he gets so much work as someone in front of the camera, because he's so good. His delivery is so wonderful. He's got a sharp mind. And I didn't think that a few years later we'd be looking at someone who had, number one, an Oscar win, and as well as that, 3 other Oscar nominations spread over 2 movies. This is somebody who is much more than I think I ever gave him credit for. This is someone that seems to just have this wonderful mind for movies, between Get Out and being a producer on Black Klansman. And from what I'm hearing in this one, Jordan Peele, like, why didn't he get into directing and producing earlier?
Well, I think he always had a hand in his sketch comedy and a hand in different things, but I guess it's just, yeah, he was doing well with the acting, and I'm guessing that acting is probably what opened the doors for him. And you're right, when Keanu came out, I don't think I would have ever guessed that he had Get Out in him or that he had Us in him. But looking back at Keanu, you can see little bits of that, because he wrote that screenplay, and you could see someone who is really good at meshing in sort of homage and different sort of, and putting different genres within it. Like, Keanu's a comedy, but it also has a lot of action elements, and there's a lot of callbacks to other previous movies, but blending in to make it something original. So looking back, you could see it was kind of there, but it's not like I called it. Mm-hmm.
Now I'm thinking of Keanu, and all I can picture is him doing the backflip off the wall.
Yeah, well, there's just little things like that. Like, I like how that movie was structured, and definitely someone who you could tell is a fan of cinema. And yeah, Get Out was a movie where, even though I think it's deep and complex, has a lot of social issues, it's just a great crowd pleaser and a very easy movie to watch, even without any of the subtext. It's just so rewatchable. And I really think Us is at that same level. The only real difference, I would say, is this one does a harder, crazier twist.
And
I think that one may throw some people off. And I think some people may see plot holes. I didn't at all. I thought it was all earned. I thought it's one of those things where I think if you rewatch it, you're kind of like, oh no, this makes sense. It's crazy, but it works. It worked for me, at least.
I was happy to hear that you said it sort of starts off like a home invasion, but then takes a twist. I enjoy that idea, because home invasions, there's so many movies where you sit down that you just don't think, oh, home invasion, that end up turning into a standard home invasion film. And it gets so boring. And it was nice when you see something like Hush that's different. And I found... what was that movie, you know, in theaters that I liked more than you?
Purge?
No, You're Next. I appreciated that one because I thought it took a fun, energetic twist on that. So I love when there's a stale genre that you just sort of slump down in your seats every time you realize a film's just devolving into another home invasion. I love it when someone comes along and just pumped something new into that.
Well, even when this is doing the home invasion portion of the movie, I guess I could say, it does it differently because it essentially every other character is going after their sort of double. And so you get four different stories going on during that period. And I thought it did a really good job of meshing that. And I haven't even really seen that kind of done in a home invasion movie.
That's very interesting. Lupita Nyong'o, what?
Incredible, yeah. Scott. This is an amazing performance. She's going to be Toni Collette'd.
Yeah?
I think so. Toni Collette should have been nominated, and I don't think Lupita will probably be nominated, but she should.
I hope she's nominated then. From what you're saying, sir, I hope she is.
Well, then she wouldn't be Toni Collette'd.
No, she wouldn't be. She would not be at all. But since
I mean, we've been wrong before. Like, we didn't think we thought Grand Budapest a few years ago was going to get ignored because it came out too early, and we were wrong. So I hope I'm wrong here too.
Yep, and I mean, Get Out had a Best Actor nom, so it's not.
This one's more horror, though. I would say this one leans heavier on the horror. It's got more blood. It does more scares. It does more setups. Like, this is even more horror. So I feel like this one may not get the same acknowledgement because it delves higher. It's more into the genre, kind of like A Quiet Place.
Okay. Yeah, that could probably scare off some of the Oscar votes for sure.
Maybe. This is a spooky, unsettling movie. But it's funny and fun, too.
Yeah, and I really, really feel the need to see it. I have to say, there's times I love where I live. It's amazing. I can go for the most beautiful walks in winter, in summer, in spring, in fall, if the day's right. And it's just phenomenal. And my agoraphobia is almost gone from being up here. But I wanted to see Us. I really wanted it.
Yeah, what are we looking at now? We're almost looking at three. Has it been almost? You've been up there almost as long as you've been down here for recording, right?
Nope. I've been up here. I'm just over 2 years up here.
And we did. Yeah, I guess we did 4 years down here of the show.
Correct.
Okay, fine. Well, it feels long. Okay? It feels long. I miss you.
When I am not present in anyone's life, time, nay, all things, will come to a standstill.
My kids still ask about you. Even Danica asked when Scott's sleeping over again.
Well, if I... Never mind. This is going to sound awful because I was going to say, well, if I arrive, I hope she wears a cocktail dress, but that does not seem right. And I am not that guy. I am not that guy.
Scott, I know it's coming from an innocent place, so I will not kill you.
Okay. How horrible, though.
She would dress up for you in completely innocent ways.
Innocent way. Yes. Oh, all right. Let's get back to business and move on. So that was 4 stars for Chris. For Jordan Peele's Us.
And yeah, I mean, I've been waiting for that big blowaway movie this year, and Jordan Peele delivered like I thought he would.
Sweet. Awesome. Now we are off to Triple Frontier. This is a movie that is directed and written by J.C. Chandor. He shares screenplay credits with Mark Boal, who has been involved in Catherine Bigelow movies such as Hurt Locker, Zero Dark Thirty, Detroit. And, I mean, Catherine Bigelow is a producer on this film as well, along with Charles Roven, I believe his name is, who was big into a lot of the Warner Brothers projects. So there's some hefty names. Like, when I say Warner Brothers, pretty much from Batman Begins, everything, I think even Aquaman, he's been in that. So, I mean, these are some very big names. J.C. Chandor, you know, did an amazing job with Most Violent Year. And, I mean, if we're looking at past stuff to predict how this movie is going to be, J.C. Chandor working with Oscar Isaac. Awesome. Oh, Oscar Isaac working with Garrett Hedlund. Oh.
Yeah, brother.
And it's funny, when we talked about Garrett Hedlund and Charlie Hunnam being in a movie together, Chris made the joke about how they're the exact same people, pretty much. Well, luckily they play each other's brother, so, I mean, that works. I also have to say, anytime a film starts off with For Whom the Bell Tolls by Metallica, it instantly has a 75% chance of being better than a movie that doesn't start off that way. So, I mean, things are looking good. Anyways, we have Santiago Pope Garcia, played by Oscar Isaac, who is working in, looks like, Northern Central or Northern South America. And he is trying to assist in bringing down drug dealers. And there is one in particular that he has a real, you know, bone in his craw to get. And that is Laredo. He is a vicious, vicious drug kingpin. And he's working with a confidential informant who just, I guess, suddenly has the information that he needed. And so he is going to plan an attack on Laredo. And this isn't just anything normal, because the word is this guy doesn't use any banks, anything like that. His house is a fortress. His house is the safe. That's where all the money is. And Oscar Isaac wants to go take him out and get the money and get out of there. So what he does is he tries to recruit his old special forces buddies. There's Ben Affleck, sort of the commanding officer, Tom Red Fly Davis. Charlie Hunnam is William Ironhead Miller. Garrett Hedlund is Ben Miller. And Pedro Pascal as Francisco Catfish Morales. And he pitches to them that, you know, they'd be working with the government, trying to take them down. And because he is basically a consultant, whatever they seized, he would be getting 25% of. And so he recruits these guys and just says, you know, we're just doing reconnaissance. We're not doing anything else like that. Just I'll pay you money to do reconnaissance and that's it. And so he gets them down there. They check it out. And then he pitches, well, we just go and we steal everything. Now, sort of the person who was the wet blanket from the beginning was Ben Affleck's character, who, you know, he's definitely got some money issues with his family. He is separated from his wife. He's got his daughters that he wants to provide for, but he is having a hard time making ends meet after, you know, in the world after his service in the military, which is basically where the rest of the fellows fall, with Charlie Hunnam making his money just by going around and appearing to what looked like speaking to soldiers with, at the beginning it looked like soldiers with PTSD, because he talks about strangling a guy, but then he switches the conversation to people are going to try to recruit you for the private sector. So I actually didn't know what he was talking about. Maybe I still don't. No, I still don't. It's true. I still don't. So that's how he's making his living. His brother, Ben, he is doing mixed martial arts fights in sort of low-scale venues. So they all need money, and that's the hook that Oscar Isaac's character pitches. And finally, he gets Ben Affleck's character to go in on this. Finally, he gets him along. And so they go in, things go, well, it's a movie, so something's got to happen to add drama. So things go wrong in a way. And I like the movie. I like the setup and everything. I have one problem with it. And that's the writing of Tom Redfly Davis. I really appreciate it when characters, you know, we see them twist and turn from who they were once they get sort of allured by something. But his transformation is what was really hard to understand in light of who he was. This is someone who was really calculating, someone who was really smart and everything like that. And when they're robbing the place, he changes completely. He's not paying attention to time. He's not paying attention to any of the details that they planned out. They are hooking up money to a helicopter that is too heavy for it to fly. And they don't make smart decisions. And it's it's difficult to understand that transition of character when it's this, you know, pronounced. And as well, at times in this film, I felt like there was really manufactured drama at times. There's a moment on the side of a cliff where an argument breaks out, and it's just like, okay, they needed to write an argument, and there's no real basis for an argument. So that stuff happens, and it's very frustrating because, like I said, I like the setup. I like the locations in this film, and there are some neat scenes and some good action sequences. But this is definitely, I felt, far from J.C. Chandor at his best. I felt like, the writing of the Tom Red Fly Davis character really let down the movie for me, and as well as these forced dramatic moments. I'm still going to recommend it. I'm giving it 3 stars. But this is a film that, looking at the people in it and people involved, I could have been given this 4 stars.
Yeah, this movie ends up being a bit of a disappointment for me as well. I did like the action sequences. I thought it was really well shot, and I thought the action was really good. But I thought the character development was actually really weak across the board. I didn't think they did much to really have me connect to any of the characters or like any of these characters. And the Red Fly thing, like, you nailed it. I mean, when they wanted him to sort of, he does this total shift that's not earned and made no sense. Like, it was totally different to who he was supposed to be at the beginning. He was supposed to be their leader. He's supposed to be calculated. And then he becomes just obsessed and making these massive mistakes. And not just him. I didn't like how the rest of his team interacted with him. They were just accepting him. When this is life or death, I think they would have pounded him a bit harder.
No, that's a really, really good point.
I didn't accept how they took it.
I should also point out that with the catfish character, there was some inconsistencies there as well, because there was a standoff in a village, and I like the standoff, and something goes down, and he's responsible for it, and he's obviously shaken by it, but later on in the movie, he's just like, kill anybody. No, take the shot, kill them. And to me, like, we just like 15 minutes ago, you weren't that character.
When I talk about me having character development issues, that was actually a big, big problem for me, in that they talked about how killing people changes you. And they tried to make it this thing where they wanted to avoid it as much as they can, and it was tearing them apart. But the other parts of the movie, they weren't that at all. It wasn't affecting them. Mm-hmm. They did care. They did it no problem. And it contradicted what they were trying to establish earlier. Like, they were more concerned about a mule that dies than some of these people.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Exactly.
So I can't full-on recommend it like you, just because I was engaged in the action. But to be honest, it's a pretty simplistic story. It's pretty straightforward. So there's nothing really stand out about it in that way. I liked sort of the premise and them taking this drug dealer and how they want to take him down. And I liked sort of where it opened up doors of them being complicated characters. But I didn't think it delved deep enough into the characters. I didn't think the characters were fleshed out enough. And so I couldn't totally attach into this. It was sort of like a good-looking movie, but the substance was lacking. So I went 2.5 because, I mean, I was entertained, but I can't really recommend this.
Yeah, and I should point out, too, there's not a lot of action sequences, and definitely not prolonged action sequences. But
they're good.
Yes, they are good. And, I mean, looking at Most Violent Year, that one didn't have a lot of, you know, big moments like that either. For an organized crime film, it actually didn't have very many at all, but it still was very dynamic. And when those moments in that film did happen, I mean, your heart's pounding and the adrenaline's going and you're just sucked in. So J.C. Chandor can do these movies that are mostly, you know, about characters that have these moments of action in them. And I really wanted that here. I really, really wanted that.
Well, I think they did a decent job with some of the tension. And so that's why it's all the way up to 2.5. But yeah, this is definitely J.C. Chandor's weakest one. What's interesting, though, about this movie is this movie's been in the pipeline since 2010, and originally Kathryn Bigelow was supposed to direct it. It was going to be a studio movie, I'm assuming, for Warner Brothers, and it was going to star Tom Hanks, Johnny Depp, and Will Smith, and that was back in 2010, and then it didn't come through. If that happened, I think it would have been a very different movie.
I think so. I think this style of film is more up Kathryn Bigelow's alley.
I think it would have been a better movie. I wonder, though, if she looked at that screenplay and said, no thanks. Because it's a little bit, like, I know you were recommending it, but it is a bit of a weak screenplay, at least in the character part.
It is. It is. And I liked what you mentioned, that they sort of hinted that the movie was going to be about, was, you know, this, they didn't want to take lives. They, you know, they were down for doing this mission when it only involved the drug dealer losing his life and everything like that. And when they had to pull a trigger on one of the guards first and things sort of went off, I liked where that was going. And I wish, like you, I wish it actually had some sort of actual payoff in a measurable way, but it just, yeah, it comes up here and there, and yeah, the mule dies and that was a living animal, man. Yeah. Well, what about those villagers that you mowed down?
Yeah, it's a little clunky in how they handled that stuff, which was really unfortunate. It didn't end up being as deep as they wanted to be. And so when they tried to do those character moments, I thought it slowed the movie down a bit, unfortunately. I like that you mentioned, you know, there's some Metallica in this, because apparently the music consultant, because you know how I like to look at the closing credits, Lars Ulrich was behind the music here.
Yeah, Lars, that's awesome.
So that, because I know Metallica is usually pretty picky in who gets to be in their movie. I know, or the rights issues, they're pretty, I think they command a lot. So that's why you don't hear Metallica a lot in movies. And so that stood out to me. Then it made sense when I saw the closing credits. Ulrich played a big part in this. The closing credits has, it's just a score, but it sounds very Metallica.
Yeah. At the beginning too, there's a, in the first 15 minutes, there's a few songs, and the song choices I thought were all quite good. And it felt like it was leading us down a wonderful road. I need to point out something. When they're getting excited about the money, I found this kind of funny. They say to Ben Affleck's character, who's got the young daughters, you can tell your daughters to stop studying because you can buy their way into Harvard now. And it,
yeah.
If you ask actresses, Felicity Huffman and Lori Loughlin, you know, what's new in your life? Oh, you know, just on $1 million bail because spent $500,000 getting my daughters into the University of Southern California as coxswains for rowing, even though they've never done it.
I wondered if, yeah, when I heard that, I was like, oh, that's going to be topical. But there's no way they shot that in after.
Exactly. There's no way. It's just, it was a beautiful coincidence.
Yeah, no, I chuckled on that one too. And yeah, I think technically this is a really good movie. And you can see what J.C. Chandler does. It's just story-wise, I had a little issues. It's weird though, because you're recommending this, but I feel like you're kind of leaning sort of my way on this too, where it's a bit of a disappointment.
No, this is a huge disappointment. And I think I'm recommending it because I didn't feel like time dragged at all. I still found that there was decent setups. Even if I found a hard believing how the characters acted in the lead up to some of these things, I still liked how he still used the environment well, I should say.
So what you're saying is, basically, I just have a higher standard.
Yeah, I'm a bit easy, aren't I?
So, yeah, that's a recommendation from Scott and not quite for me. So 3 from Scott and 2.5 from me. And now we are going to move on to another Netflix movie, a foreign movie, because they have been amazing lately.
Yes. They have.
This one is from Spain, which is usually a country that delivers movies that either me or Scott usually like. And this one, the English translation of it is The Photographer of Mathausen. Is that how you say that?
I think so.
Okay. That's why I'm going with the photographer of Mathausen. It's based off a real story, real life character, Francesc Boyk, who was basically he was in a camp. He was in one of the detention camps that the Nazis put together during World War II. This camp, Mathausen, was one that was full of people from Spain. Essentially, after the invasion, Spanish people were sort of, many Spanish people were kind of left without a home. And when they went to France, France kind of disowned them. And so then the Nazis ended up putting them in these camps. And so this one, like I said, is largely populated with Spanish people. And Francois Box, a real-life person, he was part of the Nazi propaganda. The Nazis, for whatever reason, loved to sort of track it, all the things they did. And so they did a lot of pictures of the detention camp and showing all their sort of their stories that they wanted to tell, these things that they would put together. And so he had a huge part in developing the photos there. And then when the Nazis started losing the war, they wanted to get rid of all the evidence. They wanted to get rid of all the negatives. And Francisco Boy, he actually was one of the ones who preserved the negatives and basically sent them out to the world so people could see the atrocities that the Nazis were doing. And this movie is essentially based off that. It's that historical drama. Mario Casas stars as Francisco. And he apparently lost, I think it was 40 pounds to take on this role, to make himself look more like a prisoner. And I really do think Mario, I'm not really familiar with him, but I think he delivers a great performance here. He has a great balance of someone who feels sort of light, has sort of a sense of humor, tries to have some hope in a dark place, but he also has someone who obviously has been beaten down by a situation, someone who is focused and determined. And I just really thought he did a great job of holding this movie together and keeping you engaged in that character. This is the second feature of the director here. And she did a special movie before here. And I think you definitely see a confident and competent director here, Mara Tegarreno. I thought there were some great shots here. I thought there was some really strong cinematography. And basically what you have here is a little bit of like a thriller, because he's trying to get these negatives out. He has to come up with a way to get them out before he gets trapped. And I thought she did a really good job of some of the use of music and the pacing to set up some of those tense moments. I also like the fact that even though this is horrific and we've seen so many detention camp movies, that I didn't think she went over the top with being gruesome. She knows that we're aware of this stuff and we didn't need to be beat down by that. She still makes it look like a horrible place and causes a lot of tension, but she didn't overdo it. I also love the fact that it's a movie that felt like it didn't have to do it in its blue, steely, grainy look that we always get with these kind of movies. This is actually bright and colorful, like I said, and that's why I like the cinematography. She did a good juxtaposition between sort of indulgence and elegance and hope mixed with sort of the rawness and the evilness that is happening there. I didn't think all the supporting performances were as strong as the lead, and I did think that there was a lot of storylines here that sort of bogged things down. I didn't really understand all the characters' motivations at time. I thought we had a few characters and arcs that I think it was trying to say something, but it bogged the story down. I didn't really understand some of the things they're doing here. And unfortunately, the last bit of the movie gets very heavy-handed, and they really start trying to push down the message that they wanted to say. We've also got a few token characters that I don't know if they're historically accurate. We have like the boy who's lost his father, and he tries to give him hope. Another man who's trying to be reconnected with his family. We've got a woman who's sort of being used as a hooker who again, the lead is trying to give her some optimism. And all these characters felt kind of stock. And so I couldn't fully connect with this movie. It's one where I admit it's well made, it's well done, and it's got a powerful message and maybe a story that's worth telling. But as an emotional connection, it kind of lacked for me. So I'm going 2.5.
I don't know what to say at all, Chris.
Are we disagreeing huge here?
No, no, you said everything. You said what I would say. I'm sorry, I'm a jerk for putting it that way. It's a bit of a jerky move to...
Yeah, like it's a well-made movie, but it's hard to connect to.
It is. I mean, on the point of having a lot of these sort of side stories, one of the issues that I think is the fact that our main character is skinny, white, and shaved head. And every other character is skinny, white, and shaved head. So when you've got a number of characters with different stories that all look alike, it's difficult. It gets difficult. At least for me, it did.
Yes.
And so if you're going to have everyone sort of looking the same, pare back all those things so it's more streamlined, so it's easier to connect, okay, this character, this, instead of having all that stuff. I like the fact, like you said, that it doesn't bog us down in the horrible aspects of this. It hits at them, and there are some, like the scene at the dinner party, boy with a gun, that was, I mean,
horrible.
That was horrible. But it didn't feel like a movie where they were just smashing us to the ground.
No.
That was very well balanced and well seasoned. And when you're doing a movie of something that's been done many, many times before, this is a really brilliant route to take it, because they're going in a direction that we haven't seen before. They're putting it from a perspective that hasn't been done. So, yeah, it's, you know, concentration camp during World War II, but it's not the typical story. So there's many things going for this and many reasons why I would love to rant and rave about it. But just from story, like the actual story of it and the consistency of the story and the execution of it, did feel like it let me down, almost like in that third act. Like the first two acts, I'm feeling, yeah, this is a really, really solid movie. And then it just sort of comes undone a bit.
Yeah, the final act is really what stopped me from being able to recommend it. Like I said, it just got too heavy-handed, and it went against sort of the delicate nature that they had leading up to it. And yeah, and so, and I actually went into this movie really nervous, because like, oh man, another Holocaust movie. Like, there's just been so many of them, and I've been kind of struggling with depression stuff lately. It's like, I don't need this movie. And so I am glad, like you said, it went different.
Mm-hmm. Yes, which is always, always, always a nice thing. And it is really, really an interesting real true life story. I ended up doing a bit of reading on it because I thought, you know, this has got to be really exaggerated or something like that. And, you know, finding out that, you know, this guy saved thousands of negatives through different, using them in different ways. It wasn't just one method he got them out in. It was a bunch of different ways. And yeah, really, really quite fascinating story. I just wish it held together better.
Yeah, no, it is a fascinating story, and like I said, I thought the lead was great, and I thought the director definitely delivered intention at different times throughout the movie, and so, like I'm saying, it's a well-made movie. It's just some of the beats you've seen before, some of the story points, I didn't think they need to be there, so it bogged down, and so really it comes down to, I could see why some people would praise this. It's really well-made. I just cannot emotionally connect.
Yeah, so that's... I didn't say my rating. It's 2.5 for me as well. So we're
so. I mean, it's one of those, like, you know, you can go for it, but we warned you.
Yeah, yeah. It's technically it's fine.
Yeah,
yeah. Now, big news. We had talked before about Disney and Fox, and possibly Disney paying money and getting Fox, and Fox coming together with Disney, and oh, what wonders and what fun. And it's happened. Chris, it's happened.
It's a real thing now.
It's a real thing. And so what we want to look at is what does this mean? And when we talked about it before, I mean, we were all just guessing, but the fact is that here we are now in 2019, this has happened, and both studios have a slate of, I believe it's 10 films each for the rest of the year. And so that's 20 films that Disney is going to be having out. And that's a lot. Essentially, if this was at the beginning of the year, which it's not, it's already 3 months in, which makes it even worse. If it's the beginning of the year, that's just like, that's every two and a half weeks or so. So 2 to 3 weeks, they have a new movie coming out constantly. And while sometimes that's going to happen in the normal scheme of things, it's no studio wants to do that. You want to position your product so it can make the most money. And by having 20 films, ultimately, what's going to happen is they would have stuff cannibalizing their other products and taking money from them. So it's, I honestly think we're going to see a number of movies either bumped, put on hold, or wiped off completely, because that's just too much. Another thing is what they've talked about, you know, we're not going to PG-13 Deadpool. We're not going to do this and that. But that, I think the only way to do that is to keep the Fox name. And to keep the Fox name, number one, Fox Marvel movies wouldn't stay there. I think it'd be ridiculous to keep them there. That's got to all move under Buena Vista and Disney Marvel. So then what do you have left at Fox that needs to be under the Fox name? Pretty much then at that point, I think it's all the adult centric fare, things like the, you know, upcoming, the 2020, follow-up to Murder on the Orient Express, films like that, that are going to be, you know, more mid-budget, mid-grossing films. And so that's why to keep Fox. But if I look at Disney and their strategies, that's not what they go after. What, they have one film maybe a year that's more mid-range, like last year is Christopher Robin. Everything else with Disney is event, is tentpole, is big. And I don't know if they would have all these other films being released during the year if it's not part of their normal strategy of those big movies. So I think there's going to be a lot of stuff that's cut, and I think that audiences are going to be left with less choice. I think Disney is just going to be more still sticking with tentpoles.
Yeah, I know there's some people that are excited by the fact that the Fantastic Four and the X-Men are moving over to Marvel Studios, and now they get to be done by sort of in that world, and they get to play now with the Avengers, all the different characters. And I get that's exciting, but I mean, at the same time, let's not forget that the Fox made some good X-Men movies. Like, it seems like now all the talk is, oh, finally we get to have good X-Men movies. But I mean, there was Days of Future Past, there was original X-Men, there was the Deadpool movies, there was Logan, which is one of the best superhero movies ever. I mean, they made some good stuff, and they made some challenging stuff, and they made some stuff that would have never been made under Disney.
Exactly, exactly. You mentioned Logan.
No way would have that been under Disney.
And I still, even if Disney keeps Fox separate, I have a hard time that Disney would have a different approach to the content of their films than if it's under Disney. And I don't see Logan ever happening. And on Rotten Tomatoes, they mention New Mutants and how it had huge reshoots planned for 2018 that was going to change like half of the movie, and how that didn't end up happening, and how it maybe Fox saw this coming and didn't want to spend the money on the production because they figured it's not a movie Disney's going to release anyways. So it looks like there's a possibility New Mutants will never come out.
Oh, I don't think it will. I don't think it's going to, because it's currently slotted the same weekend as Artemis Fowl. No, it's slotted a week before Artemis Fowl. Artemis Fowl is a Disney family action adventure big budget film. They're not going to put New Mutants a week before one of their big movies, especially one that's a new series, something they haven't done yet and could be a risk. They're not going to hurt it by putting New Mutants there. Without doing the reshoot, I think New Mutants is going to quietly be put on Disney Plus.
That would and probably tone down a lot if it's going on Disney Plus
or Hulu, one of the two. But no, I don't see it going on theaters. I also wonder, there's a Spies in Disguise, which was an animated movie that was coming under 20th Century Fox, voiced by Will Smith. I wonder if that's even going to come out in theaters, because is Disney going to confuse their animated movies? Like, I feel like with 20th Century Fox, they're not going to do any more animated movies under 20th Century Fox. They're just going to do Disney Studios and Pixar, rather than sort of confuse the marketplace. So I can see Spies in Disguise, another one that's part of those 10 movies you mentioned, I can see that quietly being put on Disney Plus. Ad Astra's had no marketing. It's supposed to come out in May, James Gray's movie. I don't see that coming out in May because there's been no marketing, and it's coming out the same weekend, I think, as Aladdin. Again, they're not going to compete. All these movies are on the same weekend as their movies, are around the same time. Those movies are going to either get pushed or they're going to quietly disappear onto the streaming service.
I think.
And Ad Astra's not a movie that Disney does. It's a James Gray movie. It's more of an adult movie. It's not even their type of thing. And that is another point that I'm... See, to me, this is a sad day. It's really sad saying goodbye to 20th Century Fox. It's going to stay maybe in some mold. But already they've shuttered Fox 2000. That's the place that gave us movies like I Love Simon. Love Simon, Devil's Wear Prada, and a lot of these Marley and Me, and these things that were sort of mid-budget movies geared towards adults. They've got rid of that part of the studio already, and to me, that's a clear sign that they're not really interested in doing those kind of movies. I could be wrong. They might create another arm on their own. They've promised that they're still going to do a Woman in the Widow, The Woman in the Window and The Art of Racing in the Rain. Those are two under Fox 2000. They promise those will still come out. But who knows if they're going to stick to that word? Who knows if we're going to see them completed? It's really sad to see that part of the studio closed, because Fox 2000 created some great movies. They were really the only studio that was releasing wide-release stuff like A Love, Simon, and like that type of Devil Wears Prada, like these type of things that you don't see much anymore. And with that gone, I think we're almost going to see none of that stuff coming out anymore on the big screen. And it's really sad. Another thing is you're going to cut in half. Like you said, Disney's not going to put out 20 movies a year. So if they keep 20th Century Fox, you're going to see that at least get cut in half. It's going to be no more than 5 movies, which is going to then cut down the amount of movies they do. And they're going to probably use it for stuff like Avatar. Like you said, bigger properties. The one thing that was exciting about 20th Century Fox is they're taking some gambles. They're trying to come up with some movies that would possibly become franchises. They're taking different chances. They're going in different genres. And now with it under Disney, I don't see them doing that same kind of taking chances. I don't see them taking that type of gambles. And so who knows what's going to do with something like Kingsman. Like, the one plus side is they're going to do a Kingsman spinoff. They're going to do all these sequels. I think that's going to be toned down because Disney doesn't need that as much. They're not as desperate to get tentpoles. They already have a bunch. But, I mean, Kingsman was R-rated. Are they going to soften it? Are they going to scrap it completely? And, I mean, in some ways they could use 20th Century Fox like they did Touchstone in the 80s, where it doesn't have the Disney brand, so they can actually have movies that have, like, you know, smoking in it and some swearing and actually be rated R. But I just don't know how often they're going to do that. I just don't see them taking the same gambles.
No. And ultimately, this is my prediction, ultimately, we will see Fox, the Fox name being used probably just for that, right? Or eventually after 2 or 3 years, the Fox name just disappearing completely. Because the type of movies that Fox would do, that aren't tentpoles are movies that Disney's not, they're not going to do. They're not going to do Gone Girl, a movie like that. They're not going to do a Revenant, a Mr. and Mrs. Smith, The Heat. Like those are films that Disney, that's just not Disney. And I think they're too aware of their brand that they're going to have like an R-rated section of Disney that they think the audiences aren't going to put them together or connect them. I see, honestly, Disney Disneyfying anything that Fox would do, and therefore having no reason to have or to continue having the Fox name.
Yeah, another great movie that came out of Fox 2000 was Hidden Figures.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're losing a lot of great stuff that came out of that arm, and Disney's just less interested in doing adult fare. They're less interested in even really doing, like, Oscar-type stuff. That's just not the area they deal with. The only way that I'm going to have some kind of hope is if they actually keep someone as a head of 20th Century Fox, and they keep it like a Lucasfilms thing, where it's largely seems to be kind of its own thing, but occasionally answers. So even Marvel Studios, Kevin Feige kind of runs it. So if they keep someone in there, there's a chance. But like you said, they're only going to be doing about two or three movies a year, probably, at most. Lucasfilms does like a movie a year. Marvel Studios does three movies a year. And so they're not going to be doing the same level. And so with that lower amount, most of them, Disney's going to say, do the big stuff.
Yep. Yep. I think we're losing out. I think all this is going to lose out, and we're in agreement on this, is that adult fare, that mid-budget fare. I mean, even The Martian, I don't necessarily see Disney doing a movie like that, because it's, well, while the content isn't, you know, anti-Disney, it's a gamble, right? That's not necessarily a tentpole type of film. And yeah, I don't see Disney making those gambles for adult movies.
Well, even small things, right? A Disney movie can't have someone smoking a cigarette. That's the thing they don't allow. Like a lot of things that are not family friendly are banned from Disney movies. And now it was either Bob Iger or Alan Horn who basically said, well, 20th Century Fox will allow us to go bet against Disney expectations. We can use a 20th Century Fox label to do something different. So that's what they're saying right now. But I feel like that's just to stop people from us being angry.
Yeah. And that's the thing. And that's like, I don't think we're going to see a proper another Kingsman movie, because
why? Why would they even bother?
Exactly. And they know they're still attached to it, right? The only R-rated thing I could see them possibly sticking by is Deadpool, possibly. But still, why wouldn't they want to tone Deadpool down?
I mean, they did have Touchstone in the past, and Touchstone was Pretty Woman, and Pretty Woman was rated R. So there was a time where Disney used Touchstone to do adult fare. But that was also a different time. That was right before Disney became a powerhouse. Disney's very different today than they're using Touchstone. So like you said, I think they're going to be more wary. I mean, there is potential they could use this brand. And if they do, I hope they use it for adult stuff. But even if they do, my fear is they're not going to take big gambles. They're going to use more proven stuff.
Yeah, I completely agree. So I don't see this as a positive thing for a certain demographic like us.
Yeah, and it's just sad because so many people have lost work this week, so many cuts and more people, and it's sad to see. And one less studio means less variety, and so it is unfortunate. I mean, the one plus side is, and this is just me being cynical, because Disney already has so many tentpoles, they're not desperate to find the next franchise. So we're not necessarily going to see, you know, like, oh, well, let's resurrect Die Hard. Let's resurrect Alien. Let's resurrect this, because they don't need to. So at least some of those, we don't have to worry about reboots.
Which is good, which I'm fine with. That's good. Yes.
And I think also, well, now, unless... I think it may be a different animated arm, but you may be saying goodbye to Croods 2, no more Ice Age. And I'm not saying I wanted more of those, but there's definitely going to be a lot less animated features, because I don't think Disney's going to touch any of the Fox ones.
No, No, that why would they? Because it it to me that doesn't make sense. I think Disney would also still keep the amount of animated fare to be the exact same. I don't see them increasing in any way.
So, I mean, there's a lot of things that were slated that people may have been looking forward to, and I would have to say, you know, that Croods 2 that's supposed to happen, you're probably not going to see it. Nimona, you're probably not going to see it because that was animated. The Call of the Wild, which is coming out at the end of this year, that might get shuttered away. Gambit, probably not going to see it now, so Channing Tatum now is freed up. Like, there's a lot of things that, unfortunately, you're probably, if you were excited, you don't be, because they're not coming. Mm-hmm. And here's the other thing, too, with Disney not being desperate. If this next Avatar is not a massive hit, say goodbye to that.
Yes. Yes, because there's no point in having a franchise at that point with huge dollars needed in the budget when they already have, a very proven formula already.
That also means, Scott, you got to stop looking forward to that third Independence Day movie.
But I'm dying to see it. Independence Day versus Taken versus Alien versus Predator.
Oh, but they would have to. Isn't Predator from another studio?
I believe Predator is Fox, because I was looking down Fox's.
Okay. Yeah, Fox, that's probably the end of Predator now, too, then.
Yeah. Yeah, Predator. It's on Fox.
So many great movies that were gone, and a lot of those won't even go to the Disney Plus, but I guess they'll go to Hulu. But you know what's the other sad thing, though, I just realized? Is them now buying Fox, is that like Hollywood Suite and a lot of the streaming services that I use, the one studio that most of them don't get is Disney, because Disney is so like protective. They just had Netflix, then they're doing their own studio or doing their own streaming service. With that now happening, that means all those 20th Century Fox movies are going to be pulled off.
Mm-hmm. Which is very unfortunate.
Yeah, because that's one other studio now that has older movies that I probably can't see anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
People who are excited about this, sure, be excited. I think there's a lot more things to be disappointed in.
Me as well, sir. Me as well.
But we'll see. I mean, I'm willing to be wrong. We'll see if in the next few months, if an R-rated movie gets announced, if there's an idea that they're going to return to something that's R-rated, then I'm all excited. But like you, I think there will be a few R-rated movies, but I think most of them are going to be called Deadpool.
Yes.
All right, so now we're going to go on to another kind of studio. Netflix has become its own movie studio now. And a few weeks ago, we talked about Steven Spielberg and Netflix and sort of their banning of heads and how Netflix said, we do love movies and we're here for filmmakers. And so one of the big things that Netflix is sort of trying to champion, why they say they are good, is they are saying that they are the outlet for filmmakers that wouldn't get picked up by other studios. They're allowing smaller movies to be seen. Something like a Roma that would not have ever gone wide. They're allowing everybody an opportunity to see Roma. And so Netflix has tried to champion themselves as sort of that place for smaller filmmakers or for movies that would not get a wide release in modern times. And my challenge is Netflix as good for independent filmmakers as they like to say they are? Are they actually better than an A24 or an STX or another smaller studio that will once in a while get movies to come to theaters, even to Brantford? Hereditary last year made it here. Artemis Hotel made it here last year. Is Netflix better for filmmakers than them? And I'm going to say in some ways not really, because part of it is Netflix makes way more movies than any other studio. And what they're more concerned about, what I've seen more, is they're more about the quantity. Like, we try to review every Netflix movie that comes out, and we're about 10 movies behind in 2019 releases, which must be shocking when you realize that we review about 3 or 4 Netflix movies a week. Well, I guess closer to two or three movies a week, yet we're that far behind. It's because there's so many of them. And with that glut, a lot of them just slip market and no one's ever heard about them. There's almost no marketing, very little promotion from Netflix. I think I get promoted to a bit more because I watch so many Netflix originals. It ends up being on my front page. I don't know if that's the same for a lot of other people. And so you've got all these foreign movies where they say it's great that they're getting a voice, but are they? Because it's just another piece of content that's getting stuck on their streaming service that people may never see. And it's more just because their long-term strategy is they know they're going to lose the rights to a lot of older movies. And so eventually they want Netflix to become their own kind of streaming service that just, I think, largely streams their own stuff. But that approach, all it is just basically throwing out content. It's just rather than necessarily worrying about quality or really giving these movies a lot of voice. There's a few movies like Roma, where if there's a movie that has a chance of getting Oscar buzz, they're going to promote it. Busker Scruggs, Roma, Irishman this year, being directed by Martin Scorsese. I think it's good for them because they're big name movies and they're big events, and Netflix is going to treat them like that. But guess what? Irishman would get the same buzz and promotion if it was going out in theaters too. Like, I'm not sure if Netflix is necessarily improving them that much. And if they are, the simple fact is they still have that big name. There still would have been buzz behind them. But I look at something like The Witch, or I look at Hereditary or some of these other movies, and I feel they were talked about more because they actually went to the theater. I don't know if The Witch would have benefited by going on Netflix. I think Netflix would have just treated like that's the movie of the week that comes out, and then within a week no one's talking about it anymore. Well, being the theater, it actually got a following, it got discussing. Because here's the thing too, is there's a lot of critics, right or wrong, that still don't really consider Netflix movies as big event movies. There's a lot of critics that do not review Netflix movies. They don't talk about them. So that's one total area where there's not much conversation, and so there's not a lot of promotion for those movies. But they will review The Witch, or they will review smaller movies that do come to the theater, and so they get more promotion that way because it's part of the film conversation. It's happening in podcasts. It's happening in print and on websites because they're reviewing these movies that come to theater while largely ignoring the Netflix movies. Like I said, Triple Frontier, yeah, it got reviews. Roma, it got reviews. Busker Scruggs, it got reviews because those are big event movies. But the smaller stuff, there wasn't a lot of reviews for The Photographer for Methuen. There wasn't a lot of reviews for Sony or some other stuff that we did talk about on the show. And so I don't think it's in the conversation. So I don't really know if Netflix did a lot to help the filmmaker. It helped them because it fills content, but I don't know if it's really beneficial for the filmmaker. There is exceptions. Last year, To All the Boys I Loved Before, that definitely became a hit. That was talked about. It was in the conversation. It made it on websites. It got reviewed. That took off, and I think it helps that Netflix went into a different genre, a genre that's underserved. It was a romantic comedy. It turned out to be good, and so it did catch fire, same as Set It Up. So there is a few of those that are exceptions, but there's more and more movies that I think actually get ignored. And just looking at something like The Witch, or even look at Crazy Rich Asians. I think Crazy Rich Asians benefited way more because it was one that Netflix wanted to get. I think Crazy Rich Asians benefited way more going in the theater and doing well in the box office and grabbing an audience than it would have on Netflix. I think on Netflix, it would have been forgotten. Well, today we're still talking about it.
I think this one is... To me, I think the answer is yes and no. I think in certain circumstances, like you mentioned Asani, that's a film that, I mean, I doubt we would have ever even heard about it if it wasn't on a platform like Netflix. And it's a wonderful film. And, you know, there's some quiet ones that get in there that end up getting seen. But, you know, you mentioned the whole promoting thing. Was Sony really, was it promoted? Was it, you know, pushed by Netflix? Did they try to get critics to watch it? No, not really. So.
And they do send screeners now, but again, it's just for the big stuff.
Yeah. And so I see in some cases, yes, it is good. And you mentioned The Witch and films like that, which end up, you know, getting talked about and out there because they sort of take off. Because if Witch, or even if, you know, Ex Machina, if either of those were on Netflix, they wouldn't have got the following that they did, would they have?
Like both, I don't think so.
Both of them, you know, just grabbed a group of people, each of them, and really, really cemented that they were unique films that were talked about. And yeah, they wouldn't really get there. And what if a film like Revenant, what if that was on Netflix? And you look at the amount of money that made as adult fare. I think it was well over 200 million domestic. There's no way that something like that would be wise with Netflix, because number one, how many eyeballs are going to get on it? And even people reviewing it, because it is a well-known director, how much weight are they going to give it? But are they going to sort of deduct marks because they're playing in the kiddie pool instead of, you know, in theater? So yeah, I see it as both good and bad.
Oh, it is definitely good. It's mm-hmm. definitely good to some degree, in that there is movies that you and I would not have been able to see if it wasn't from Netflix. There is the access there. And so I do think that's a positive. But Netflix touting that they are great for them, not. I think they still are being underserved. I don't think they're necessarily getting the eyeballs that Netflix is trying to claim, because they're not, like you said, they're not promoting them. And I mean, I think things are going to change, but I think most film critics, there's one film critic I know, and he outright says, I can't watch every movie, so the movies I skip are the Netflix ones. I do theater movies. And he admits, is that right? Is that wrong? Like, am I going to have to change my approach? Maybe, but the reality is the stigma still is, like you said, Netflix movies aren't considered the important movies yet by most film critics. And so that's a huge part of the conversation that gets missed.
Mm-hmm. And something like Paddleton, I think to me, people like the Duplass brothers are perfect for Netflix, because I don't know how wide any of their movies are, you know, we're ever going to be. I think they're indie scene, and they're happy being indie scene, and the types of movies fit well with that. And so I look at the Duplass brothers and Paddleton, and I think that's a really, really good marriage, because they're able to make the types of movies they want, and they're going to get, you know, paid for them. They're going to get good distribution. And so, yeah, that's a really good pairing as far as I'm concerned. But, you know, you said it, it's quantity, it's not quality. They're not, are they championing people? Like, did they see Ava DuVernay and say, oh yes, we are going to just nurture you? And I don't know. No, they aren't just like grabbing these young filmmakers and saying, yeah, we're going to nurture you and give you, you know, a canvas to paint on. I don't think they are as good as they say they are.
Yeah, I don't think Netflix can take responsibility for Ava DuVernay becoming a great filmmaker or anything. I don't think they necessarily gave her opportunities maybe to improve her craft. One area where she does appreciate them is that her movies got a wider distribution because of Netflix, and that is a positive. But I don't know if they are delivering as much as maybe they want people to think, that they're giving as many opportunities as they want people to think. Mm-hmm. But there is at least that there's more opportunity for people to see those films than they would have if Netflix didn't exist. Because like you said, the Duplass brothers, they never would have come to Brantford in any universe. And something like Duplass brothers, another thing where I think you are right, where Netflix is good for them, I think they're more of one that has kind of a loyal following. They more have that cult following, and they are going to follow probably Duplass brothers wherever they went.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would.
And they're going to be aware of where Duplass brothers are.
Yeah, I would agree with that completely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm not saying Netflix is the end of the world. I guess I'm still just trying to hold to the theatrical experience. I think the theatrical experience is still the best exposure certain filmmakers can get. Like, definitely Crazy Rich Asians, I think, made the better decision to go to theaters. But yeah, something like Duplass Brothers, you're right, this was a better decision.
Mm-hmm. And I would say documentaries in general, because documentaries, how many documentaries have gone wide that you can recall?
Like, last year there was two that went wider because of their success, but as far as I know, they still came nowhere near me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they go doc-wide.
Yes, yes, exactly. So I think documentaries are, Netflix is a huge positive for documentaries and foreign films. But we've been saying that ever since they started releasing documentaries and foreign films.
Yeah, and I mean, I just wish they didn't have the eyes on one day Netflix just being their original stuff, because if that wasn't their goal, I think they would slow down on the number of movies they release. I would like them to cut it in about half.
Yeah, yeah, because I
the quality just isn't there. Like, there is good ones, but they're not even hitting 50-50.
No, they're not. They aren't. So, to me, if and when they do get to a place where it's where they're only Netflix movies, I'm no longer a Netflix subscriber.
Yeah, and I mean, because, and there was another critic that said this, that there's this sort of movies that are even sort of decent Netflix movies, they still kind of just feel disposable and forgettable. Like, there's a reason why a Netflix movie has never made my best. Oh no, that's not true. The 13. Other than the 13, no Netflix movie has made my end of the year list, because largely, even when they're good, they're not memorable.
Mm. I can't argue with that.
No, because it's sound.
Because it's
and
sound.
I am unbeatable.
That's right. That is right.
And I just spat on my screen.
Mm-hmm. Well, that I do that too. So I can't really blame you.
And that's why we don't do video.
There's a lot of reasons. We are radio pretty. I think that you and I can agree the fact that we are radio pretty.
I'm radio gorgeous.
All right. So right now I'm going to review or run down the movies that we talked about this week. There were three of them. First of all, Us. This was Jordan Peele's second film, his return to horror, and Chris gives it the 4-star rating and says that it is a very, very interesting film and one that I'm going to be jumping all over the moment it comes out for rent. Then we talked about Triple Frontier, J.C. Chandor, and I think it didn't help that we know what he's capable of, because that really sort of, at least for me, amplified the issues that I had with the film, because the story and the character development, both Chris and I agreed, was not great. And so I gave it 3 stars. Chris gave it 2.5. And then, though, we connected. We had a connection emotionally and mentally with the photographer of Mathausen, both giving it 2.5 stars. Interesting story. Love the fact that it's not the typical concentration camp tale. It's just, both of us saw the third act as being what let it down the most and sort of fell apart and had too many side stories, and it could have been tighter, and it would have, I think we would have both recommended it. I'm not saying for you, because you like to put down anything that comes across your path. You don't want to recommend anything, sir.
Just like Us, which I gave 4 stars, right, and call it a masterpiece.
That's right. You just,
because I don't like horror.
Because you're a curmudgeon. That's what you are. You're a curmudgeon.
Yeah. No. This week I'm telling everybody, turn off the Netflix, go out to the theaters,
and
see Us.
See Us. And I'm gonna be in Toronto tomorrow, or to the listeners today. So I may try to find a theater, but I may not, because I don't like Toronto.
Well, if I know Toronto's stressful, and I think the movie theaters are even more stressful, but if you want to take the risk, I think it's way, way, way worth the emotional damage you'll have to suffer for the next few weeks.
Sweet. All right.
Oh, maybe you didn't read the notes I made, but I just noticed now you forgot to shoehorn in a Josh Peck mention during Us.
Oh, yes. I even brought Josh Peck's IMDb page up while you were talking about Us. And yes, I did not do it. I missed it. But also at the same time, I didn't mention Powder or Dr. Giggles during the Us review. So I let you down.
Or down Periscope.
Or down Periscope. So I've let you down in a number of ways.
Yeah, you did. All right. Well, we can move on with life, I guess.
There we go. If you want to email us and give us your thoughts on the movies we talked about, or suggest topics that you would like us to discuss, we're open to that. You can hit us up at themoviebreakdown@gmail.com or on Twitter at moviebreakdown1 and our Facebook page. I almost said Facepeck page. Josh Peck. Our Facepeck page is The Movie Breakdown. If you listen to us on iTunes, please do give us a rating, write a review, or just, you know, be friendly and share us. Be a pal. Tell someone else, hey, you know, if you told two friends and they told two friends and so on, it'd be wonderful. Anyways, you can check out my work on my blog, movieadayblog.blogspot.ca. And I had something that I planned on writing. Oh, I wrote about Den of Thieves. So there.
Always the hot topic. Always on top of the pulse, Scott.
That's right. Feeling the pulse. Everyone's wanting to know my thoughts on a movie that's over a year old.
Well, you can also read my stuff over at chrisspicerblogspot.com. Wait, let's try that again. You can go over to my blog. It's chrisspicer.blogspot.com.
Isn't it .ca?
Well, if you put in either, it gets you there.
Okay, sorry.
Like, if you put in .ca, it changes to .com once you're on there.
Okay, Siri, I am. How about a web search for it?
So, somehow, what we were saying activated Siri.
Okay, so my point is, once you get to the site, it says chrisspicer.blogspot.com.
Okay.
When you get to the site, that's what it says.
Sorry.
But you can put in .ca and it won't take you there. Anyways, this week I wrote a little follow-up to Wonder Park and just sort of talked about the interesting difference between live action and animated when it comes to the different guilds, the director guilds and the writers guild. So if that interests you, you can do that. And as well, Scott brought back his box office piece, and that's an interesting read. And he did better than some of the other experts did, but he still missed it right now, looking by $10 million. Got $70 million this weekend.
Yeah, I'm
And
I'm
you
so
were
going
to shy down to 50, you coward.
Yeah, I was going to go down to 50. I'm glad I didn't, because I was... Number one, it's been a while. Number two, when everyone else is writing lower numbers, and I think, like, my gut is saying 60 million, that had me thinking, oh, I'm going to look like an idiot in my first post out. And I went, being on the more adventurous side of things was better, but I'm still off by 10 million, which is great, though. I think that's awesome. And like I put in my piece, I think this is the sort of thing that's going to help get other horrors greenlit, is when people see $70 million opening weekend.
Oh, yeah, no, it did huge. $70 million is a huge opening weekend. I was confident it would do well. I mentioned the piece. I'll just mention it here. Another thing about Us is I often go to the Thursday preview screenings, and I don't know if it's because people work the next day or just because they're not really promoted, and most people see Friday's opening night. But even the Marvel movies tend to be pretty empty for Thursday late night screenings. And Us, I went there just assuming, well, it's almost always empty, so there'll be lots of seats. It was almost 80% full when I arrived. So once I saw that, I was like, okay, this is a phenomenon. This is a hit.
Yeah. Wild. This is exciting, though. Very exciting.
Yeah, so you can check out our written works, and then after you do that, you can come back here next week, because guess what we're doing next week? We're reviewing movies. That's right. Next week, there's going to be movie reviews. What kind of movie reviews? Well, we're going to have a review for the latest Disney live action film in Dumbo, directed by Tim Burton. So we'll see his take on the Dumbo world. And then we've got ourselves a musical biopic. That's right. Remember Bohemian Rhapsody? Well, now we're going to get one for Motley Crue, as the Netflix original is going to do a movie based off their autobiography called The Dirt. And the word is this one is not as many kitty gloves. They're going to be more open about how it is. So we'll see if that makes a great movie next week.
Yeah, Motley Crue is a band that I just didn't listen to at all. I think, did they sing Every Rose Has Its Thorn?
No, I'm pretty sure that was Guns N' Roses.
No, I know that it wasn't Guns N' Roses.
Oh, then I don't know. I don't think it was Motley Crue.
Okay.
Maybe
Poison.
Maybe it was.
Was it Poison?
Yeah, Poison. It was Poison.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
They. You know what? Call me racist, but all those kind of bands sound the same to me.
They all look the same too. The '80s hair bands. Yeah.
Like Guns N' Roses. I know they were hot, and I liked some of their stuff. Poison, Motley Crue. I don't know who's who. I really don't.
I don't know. And I never cared. I know Scorpion. I can list a few. Hurricane.
Mr. Big.
That's a one-hit wonder. What? Yeah. Mr. Big was
But I know their song at least.
Well, that's good, isn't it?
So we're going to talk about Motley Crue next week.
Okay, good, because all their songs that I know so well. That's right. First Night in Glasgow and Dawn of the Dominance. So,
I think they're more known for their backstage craziness.
Probably. Even though
so that's why the movie could be interesting. I think it's going to be less the music and more, you know, hey, look, Tommy Lee Jones. No, wait, Tommy Lee, what? He's Tommy Lee, not Jones, but Tommy Lee.
Did those song titles sound made up that I said? Because they were.
Well,
so I like to think that I did a good job there with those song titles. So.
Well, I'm now looking at a picture of Tommy Lee. I remember that guy.
All right. Anyways, 80s hair bands are so yesterday, and I think this podcast at this point is as well. So thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of The Movie Breakdown. I am Scott Martin.
I am Christopher Spicer.
Goodbye and good luck.
Goodbye, everybody.